also any other questions that should be raised before we...
Maybe later.
I would think we should open to the public the occasion to...
Yes, yes.
And then I'll move forward.
Do you want to speak over there better so that you can... Yeah.
We could ask both of you to join us. Yeah, we have already a question for Katarina.
That was very inspiring. I have actually many questions, but I tried to pick out something. Because I have also quite some ideas I got to connect it with other concepts as for instance the concept of the membrane, where I don't know how far you go, maybe in the book also in context to structure and skin. But my question was also a bit in the direction what Stuart is brought up. Because he started with the idea of gesture as something bearing into Dasein, maybe from Heidegger, okay? Because by actually the gesture, the entity is just shaped through it. It's defining some kind of its own boundaries, moving boundaries, way of how to connect to something else, so it's becoming into Dasein in a way through the gesture. When I go from there, and to say it's always about the relation, of course, and defining a certain gesture, how an entity, how an architectural entity is in relation to its environment. When you then go and say that mannerism, and also to this question of the modern architecture, or modernifying, if you really think about something like Bauhaus gestures of forms, is it not that there will be always, when you really go all the way about this definition, that it's always a way of just an individuation of a certain body, and that this process is always taking place? And so when you can actually talk about mannerism in a not art historical definition. So this would go to both of you, because it's picking up actually to the question of this implicit or explicit way of seeing how.
Okay, very difficult question.
If I can translate it, is everything mannerist ultimately?
Yeah, in the end I was, because I had this idea of, if you go from the definition of gesture as a way of, the gesture is bringing you into actually form, in a way of the gesture is creating also the surface, the membrane, the way how the entity is shaped as a modal individuation, then we can actually take this and ask ourselves, are we not always dealing, doesn't matter what kind of entity, of this way of relation of membrane, how the membrane is shaped and how the structure, and is there not always an explicit or implicit way of discussing these aspects of how the style would play a role? So it's trying to make a connection to the world, because actually should aim for this way. And I found it very inspiring, so maybe I have also too many ideas.
I understand your question, but yeah. So the well, theoretically emphasizing mannerism is a way of introducing or submitting everything to kind of a generalized pragmatism. So we want to look at practices, and then there's the traditional classical opposition between style and manneredness, where if something is mannered, it's ugly. It's parasitical on a more spherical, perfect form. It's just the individual artist who wants to show his vanity or whatever, virtuosity. Of course, we want to take virtuosity out of this classical narrative. But so there's a classical distinction. And I think if you extract manner from the opposition style manneredness, which Agamben doesn't do because he associates manner with pathology and decadence, lateness. If you do that, allows you a more immanent perspective on things, to look at everything like in the form of the making, retranslate things as to how they are made in a way. And that's, I think that's what we've both been talking about so far. Of course, this is a mannerist ontology. It's generic in a way, so what does it historically mean? But there's moments in which manner is cultivated, which there is a cult of the implicit, of mystery, meraviglia, of suspicion of, yeah, what we call it, monstrosità, difficoltà, virtuosity. The most virtuous one is so, this is what actually what Deleuze will say at the end of the Bacon book. Bacon no longer likes his earlier works, is because everything that happens, all the deformation is almost implicit. So he wants to paint more like Velázquez in the end than like his earlier self. Because mannerism really is always implicit, I think. It's not of the implicit, that's for sure. And then, so it's everything is modally individuated. That's not interesting for an art historian. But I think there's distinctions to be made. For example, Spuigelhoek, he makes an opposition between the Gothic and the Baroque. And he says, well, the Gothic problem in the Gothic, or in the individuation problem in the Gothic, is how to stop movement, how actually think things come into a state of stasis. The problem of the Baroque, by contrast, is how to bring movement into structure. How do we produce this? Mannerism is neither. Mannerism still departs from structure, like the Baroque. But unlike the Baroque, it does not want to fit a figure into a larger whole. It doesn't have a totalizing aim. So it's not about smoothness in the end. Holding is always about creating a smooth continuity. Mannerism is not like that. Mannerism, if the Baroque is an art of masses, and of course the begins. It's an art of expansion and release. So it doesn't necessarily go back to the implicit. It just wants to explicate as far as possible. Whereas mannerism is an art of contraction. Through the contraction, through closure, it actually reopens an infinity that is non-totalized. And that is what the Serfigura Serpettinata does. Stops. It's a movement that stops. The gesture of mannerism is a gesture in suspense, whereas the Baroque gestures are not. They're a way to communicate. They're a way to.
That might pertain to the thing that one of you might have manners, which is indeed a sort of behavior. And then it has extinguished. But indeed, the manner wants to go into life, or the moment life rises up a little bit. And that's the difference. You're always on the alive path. And certainly, this is a cult of the implicit. And if you look at yes, this is a very beautiful one. If you talk about making things implicit again, folding them back, actually, this has always seen as the most anti-classical work you can imagine. But I think it is something like a classicism in statu nascendi. You see, for example, the place of the rustica stones, which is usually, according to the rules, in the plinth, or thanks to a whole story. And you see that it is actually searching its way beneath the surface, like, let's say, the expressions on a baby face. They are not related to any content. It's searching its connections, but it's still in a sort of fleeting state. And, for example, the trigger, it actually hesitates if it is a good eye. So this is indeed going beneath the surface again in this implicit state. If that's an answer.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, so then modernism, because you're excellent, would be that implicit animal.
But it was his thesis, which I think think I agree with.
I would like to stay a bit on that, but in which sense modernism equals mannerism? In the sense that they're both styles, and stylistically they have similarities. They have similarities ontologically. They have similarities in the ambitions. In which sense they're equal, or they coincide?
You mean our own time as mannerism?
No. The thesis, let's say, that mannerism is modernism, and vice versa. How is this supported? How is each of the two poles understood?
Yeah, it's a twin, I said. It's a one-act twin. That's what you would say. You always need something to work on as a mannerist. And then you go back to the, let's say, the moment of birth of, let's say, classicism or modernism. And, well, it actually happens in one oeuvre. If you look at the work of Le Corbusier, for example, in first instance, it was very classical. It remained classical in a way. But at the end, when working with Xenakis and making, for example, Longchamp, we see that there is a latent tendency in it to not to go back to that moment of birth, and he begins to deform the surfaces and go to the initial form of life, which might be present in classicism, but he actually deforms it.
I'm saying so because if one removes, and it applies to both, because you said you agree also with the same thesis that mannerism equals modernism. I'm simplifying. Or they're the twins, or they share things in common anyway. If you remove the metaphorical approach from both, saying that yeah, this looks like something anyway, because I suspect that might be the way, the entrance point that you try to bring both together. That a mannerist gesture looks like. A modernist, let's say, the Colin Rose analysis of Le Corbusier's building looks like whatever that like might be. If you remain only on the gesture, let's say, only on the expression, without any metaphorical assumption on it, and if you examine styles essentially as technological, because that's where even the word comes from, stylus meaning tools that we share, not intentions or ideologies, then I would wonder, wouldn't it be even more provocative to claim that they're both, which Quinter has said so, as for example, but they both fall under modernity. Modernity as a general ontological problem, not as a manner of style. In other words, I would say that they're different, totally, stylistically, ontologically, very close to each other.
It's my approach, man.
Okay.
Shed light on both what it means to be early modern and to what extent we are still modern today. But it goes against classical ideas, Greenbergian ideas on modernism, medium specificity, or it goes against ideas of postmodernity, it goes against ideas of linguistics, reduction of modern art,
do you share that or not?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
But there is one difference, I think, and that's actually what I wanted to ask you about. Because you emphasize constantly how beautiful modern art is. But classical modern mannerist art, you also mentioned it's beautiful, but I think modern mannerist architecture is much more pretty.
Mannerist. What do you think?
No, I'm thinking, of course, of Bronzino, like of what did I show? The first allegory I showed. It's disproportionate, it's kind of ugly, it's sterile, it's annoying. It's unenjoyable.
Yes.
So the beauty is not a thing, whereas I think in virtuosity and in, I think if classical modernism revolves around the sublime, then a mannerist modernity, modernism, actually starts to emphasize beauty much more.
I don't think so. If you look at our own era, beauty is not at all an issue. If you look at the work of Colas, well, it's certainly, it's just piling up boxes. But yes.
We're recording, so yeah.
And it's great. It is pure disjunctive synthesis. Well, you think of this painting of Akinbolo. Piling up things, well, there is a contour, but in the case of... And there is always an intention, yes?
intention to frame something else, yes. But it's not beautiful, no. Any word, even if his reference might be nice, it is not beautiful, it is actually a soup of elements. If you look at his drawings, his early drawings, you see always these elements floating on a surface. He has comprised perspective, and everything is on the same plane, and you see everything in the same depth of field. This won't lead anywhere to a beautiful room. You can't say that of the works of Koblenz, no, I don't think so. Well, if you would think of the work of Antti-Olli Wien, well, certainly that is never an issue.
The opposite.
The opposite, yes, it's monstrous. Yeah, I think it's quite monstrous. Yes.
I don't want to take someone else's. Because then I have the question, beauty is of course super difficult concept. I mean, you said pretty, I mean, we can, so how about we speak about the relation, if it's a, is there is a disharmony, harmony. So how easy is it for someone, the human, yeah, however situation we are, end up, architectural art, to relate or not relate, how harmonic is this? Is it something which opens up easily and you say, oh, there's a, in this wall, yeah, there's a place to stand, or maybe this might be an interesting aspect to actually look at the way on the differences. Because if you say there is rupture, there's something interrupted, yeah, you have this relief which would be, could be an opening or should, but it's actually closed, or you have a sculpture which is interrupted in kind of fulfilling. So maybe this is more the aspect of how smoothly this relationship is encouraged or not. Maybe this is a way of also to analyzing, not just the practice, how it's done and how implicit are certain gestures in it, but what kind of gesture is actually in the moment of encounter. So maybe this is also an aspect of to make differences and to say there is a we can divide, yeah, we can say there's something which is way more easy to enter, to encounter, and things which are very ugly. I mean, Schultz said it's ugly, it's kind of, you look and it's something which, so how is this encounter? So maybe this is interesting to look at as well.
The encounter between
in piece of architecture, a wall, a relief, a painting. So there is also a gesture of how easy is it made to encounter or not, or how much harmony is in that encounter. Because of course you have the practice of how is the relationship and how it's been done, is there a style, a technology? Because I agree, you can also say any kind of style is related to technology, of repetition of, it's a, technology is a way of doing things. If you have a tool and you know you have to use that tool in that way, it's a technology, the way how you use it. So, but then there's the point of encounter. I mean, there's a human who builds something or paints something, and then you have the encounter. So maybe you can say something about that relationship. Is there something you looked at? Yeah.
Well, I look at the other side then, in that, the encounter between the one who uses the thing and the thing itself. And then you see there is a very clear idea of persuasion and dissuasion and of inviting. And I think a good staircase is really an invitation to go up. If you, that, it's that actually what you mean.
Yeah, but does it have something to do with the aspect of mannerism? Is this clearly connected to that concept how you unfold
it? Yes, because mannerism is the first art which begins to move such a way that we might immediately have affinity with. It's a bodily way of perceiving, it's not embodied experience, but it works with insinuation, with insisting things, always, maybe also misleading. So it's indeed, we are triggered in a way to use it. If you look at the pleats, you want to stand in the pleats. That's actually, it's a way of. Or maybe this is what Lars Pagel calls in the posture. The idea that you see a movement and you're catched by it.
Because you cannot but not be solicited to do something.
Yes, yes.
I just wanted to ask briefly, use my powers ask this idea of generalized pragmatism. Recently, I read this article about now we've come to the at this time we have the capacities, the tools to really repeat. By that I mean there is this, I probably read about it, Rembrandt's oeuvre has been scanned fully, completely, so as to predict what would have been the next painting by him. And they can reproduce it, and it turns out that it would be probably a middle-aged man portrait done in a particular way. And they can actually reproduce it to such perfection that no expert can tell, in terms of like the texture, how the layers are laid out and so on. And now it comes the idea that I find really mind-blowing. So we can now do that, but actually the only person who cannot forge the painting would have been the painter himself, herself. And this is the matter of, he would have been the one who taps into this, the implicit itself, because then that would make it a non-bare repetition. It would be like a cloned repetition. So I think I say this because, as you probably know, it's been like, what is it, 40 years since, since the Venturi's introduction of postmodernism architecture. So architecture, postmodernism is now becoming again very hot in academia. Many students are interested in it. It has been long enough. But I think I'm very grateful that you touched on this idea that perhaps postmodernism is still to do with very repetition and doesn't tap into the implicit sufficiently. And which brings me to my actual question, and that's, I realize that both of you are you sit comfortably between philosophy and art, and that's not a coincidence because there's the third daughter, science itself, and to repeat what Brasier always says, the wet dream of science is to make everything implicit in explicit, so to turn all the noumena into phenomena, and we, I think I can say we wouldn't want to do that, and that's precisely I think why we continue to kind of rely on the power of art, so as to stay close to the implicit and with the understanding that perhaps it's literally inexhaustible, whatever they say. That would be my brief.
Yeah. This is a question. This is a remark. Because I would fully agree.
can I reflect on that for a moment? Because of course there's a kind of a Benjaminian subtext here, where the original Lucius aura and the era of mechanical reproduction. But I don't think that this is a way of criticizing authenticity in not a valid way anymore. Because it's still classical in the sense that you have the authentic craftsman initially, and we can call him the implicit. But I don't think he's a bearer of the implicit.
Mannerist is always a forger.
Mannerist is always a forger, but the artist is a forger. It begins as forgery, and there are manners of forging, placing art. So if we can reproduce a manner perfectly, well, that's great. But it doesn't make it less. In a way, so what I would like to distinguish is the classical, again, classical repetition and mannerist repetition. You have classical repetition where you have something that's reproduced. Mannerist repetition has no original. It's a modality, and it's an art of encounters. And in the encounter between the machinery, between technology and original, whatever, things happen. But it's about the manner. It's an aesthetic quality. I think that's why I emphasize so much the Latourian reading, of course, opposed to a scientific, grassier interpretation when I go back to alchemy, because there is no contradiction or distinction between art and science in the 16th century. They're very much related. They're both seen as practices and a way of doing things in certain ways, modalities, and understanding nature through its modalities. Modes of reproduction. I'm not sure if that helps, but
Franz said also Rosemary that it could have been otherwise, always.
Yeah. It's part of encounters. Mm-hmm. Encounters are very important, but the encounter is not just between the maker and the material. Your encounter is between two different media, painting becoming sculpture, as we saw before, or sculpture becoming architecture. So there's this whole intermedial situation full of interstices. And so one new technology, what does it mean? I mean, Deleuze, for example, will say that Bacon paints in the manner of Michelangelo. It doesn't look like Michelangelo, but he still paints in the same manner. So certain ways of contracting material you work with are repeated. Can go on forever. A manner is a common. Yeah.
Is there, before we violate all Delft Landsbreek regulations and we get legal problems, I'm joking. Is there any question? More? One last question?
I have a question. Because I didn't know that Manner is being architecture. So I was a little bit.
Certain gestures which might be blown up, staying indifferent to matter. I think that is the phantasmagorical side, maybe not the side in which we meet matter, but indeed I would call it a monistic idea. And there's so many gestures, and this is, I think, Stavros said. There might be formal repetitions, yes. And sometimes it looks like I'm only comparing forms, but it's exactly the deformation which is at stake there. And this is what bending back to the implicit and revitalizing things. And I think this is what the other two does, yes, certainly. And they want to be explicitly moderate. They will never say they are mannerist. This is what I say, yes.
Super modern.
Yes, virtuoso moderns, maybe, indeed. Super moderns, hyper moderns. Exactly, yes.
Last question.
But don't you say in your book that virtuosity is not on the side of the subject, but on the side of the object, the material itself? There is its own genius, the world it inhabits, or the habit of the material itself that makes the manner work.
I think it's always on both sides, yes. Mm-hmm. It must be on both sides, because I think the subject has to lose itself in the movements of matter itself.
Right.
So that's what Schultz says, when there is not an intellectual eye shaping matter, but the eye is already in matter, and an immediate interaction as not something seeing a form, but working
with the vibrations of matter itself.
Yes, right, yes.
It's the captain of forces that enables you to be a virtuoso.
Yes.
Right. You're invited by the matter to make it into material.
I think so.
Yeah.
On that note, I want to thank you for your guests and